Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Medication Madness, and now Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, it's the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour with guests unafraid to speak the truth about psychiatry and psychology and about how you can make the most of your own life.
And this is Dr. Peter Bregan. Before I make a few comments about where I'm going to be speaking, I want you to savor the title of the book. The book we'll be talking about today, and really the life work we'll be talking about today. The title of the book is A Government of Wolves, The Emerging American Police State. Savor that and, you know, don't drop out of the internet at this point in time. This is going to be a very important and enlightening show. Well, a reminder, I'm going to be speaking in two places that I haven't spoken in a long time, in September and in October. I'm going to be talking in South Carolina at the Adlerian Society of South Carolina. It's a very active, lively. If you want to see what psychologists are supposed to look like, you know, happy and creative, rather than down in the doldrums, come to the Adlerian Society. You can just Google it, Adlerian Society, South Carolina, September 27th to 28th, 2013. I'll be down there, and I'm going to take quite a bit of time to talk. The Adlerians believe that human relationships are what matters. They have a natural anti-drug bent, which I have managed to, I think, enliven and stimulate in them. And it's going to be a very, very good, interesting, and exciting conference. Now, another place I haven't been in a long time is New York City. So Google R.D. Lang in the 21st century. It's a little glitchy getting to this conference right now on the internet. So Google R.D. Lang, it's L-I-N-G, in the 21st century. And I'm going to be at Wayne College on Staten Island, October 25th and 26th. They're giving me a good slot of time, a bit more than an hour on Saturday, the 26th. So there's two upcoming things where I hope to meet you. I'd like to give a boost in particular to the R.D. Lang Conference. Lang is very, very important in issues of freedom in psychiatry and viewing people as humans rather than objects. And I'd like to bring folks into that conference, the R.D. Lang in the 21st century. Well, my guest today answers a kind of personal question for me in a way, which is, God, what kind of things might I have been doing if God hadn't jerked me by the scruff of my neck and made me become a psychiatrist to take on these reform issues, and I'd pursued a probably more natural bent to be a lawyer. And I think I might have been going in some similar directions to John W. Whitehead, who is the author of the book that I introduced the show with, A Government of Wolves, The Emerging American Police State. John, are you hooked in?
Yep, I'm here.
Good. Well, John has a lot of interesting background. You know, we don't do a lot of that on our shows. We let folks speak for themselves. But John is the founder, president of the Rutherford Institute. It's in Charlottesville, a magnificent place to live. I spent a year there in the U.S. Public Health Service, a great place to live. And he's the president and spokesperson. He writes a weekly commentary, and it's being distributed by several hundred newspapers. Makes me envious. He hosts a national public service radio campaign. He's been on a lot of stuff. 60 Minutes, New York Times has covered him, Los Angeles, Washington, USA Today. Good stuff. Now, very interesting. He was the co-counsel in Paula Jones' sexual harassment lawsuit against Clinton. That's going to endear him to some of my listeners and make him a pariah to others. I think it's a great thing that he did. Right out on the line with that. He's written a lot of books. He's done a lot of good legal work. He stands up for the underdog. He's had a major case involving psychiatry and the government that we might begin with. But I'm proud and excited to have the author of A Government of Wolves on, John W. Whitehead. Hi, John.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
All right. Well, listen, why don't you tell us about that case, which is so interesting, and maybe we'll spend a little time on that. And then we're going to branch out in the second half hour or sooner and talk about the substance of the book. I mean, he talks about the case we're going to start with, but we talk about this emerging police state, which I think anybody with any sense is becoming concerned about. So take over for a bit, John.
Yeah, it was about this time last year, in fact, August 16th, Brandon Robb, he is a Marine. He served in Iraq. He served in Afghanistan, decorated Marine, put his life on the line. He actually took weapons away from Al-Qaeda, Taliban-type folks, and good Marine, decorated. He was at his home in Richmond, Virginia. He had a home business, and he was typing on his computer, and he heard a lot of loud noises out in his front yard. So he went to the window and looked out, and there was these black vans that pulled up in front of his house on a driveway and up on his yard, and out jumped policemen and plainclothes policemen, supposedly, in black outfits running. They were running toward his house. He was a bit alarmed. I mean, he's a Marine, and he walked to the front door, and they stepped up on his front porch, and he said, what's up? And they said, we're here. We're very concerned about you. And he goes, why are you concerned about me? And he goes, well, one of the lead spokesmen who then identified himself as the Department of Homeland Security agent. The FBI identified themselves, Secret Service and local police. They were all working in tandem. He had done some Facebook posts. He had quoted a rap group out of Canada, some lyrics. They didn't like those. He was playing a private Facebook game called Dear Mr. Illuminati that only his brothers and sisters had gotten into. And I guess the NSA had swept his private Facebook groupings and read what he was playing, doing. Some other anti-government things he had said. He doesn't like Obama's executive orders and all those kind of things. So that was basically it, and so they asked him to step out, and he did, and they grabbed him real quick, handcuffed him behind his back. He's a jogger. He didn't have his shirt on. He asked us, could I please put my shirt on? They said no. So they took him out toward the police vans, and one policeman actually shoved him into a fence and lacerated his back. Later at the jail, he asked for a Band-Aid or something to put on his back. He was bleeding pretty badly, a big bandage, and they said no, and they slapped the prison striped shirt on him, which actually stuck to the wound in his back. He later told me that hurt very, very much. His mother and his relatives called me, and they were all freaked out. Obviously, his mother said they've kidnapped my son. I don't know what to do. So I called the police, the local police, and said, what's this man charged with? The policeman actually told me on the phone, he said, oh, he's not charged with any crime. We're just concerned about how he's thinking, psychologically and stuff. We have to put him through the civil commitment procedure. And I went, uh-oh, because I know about those, and I'll explain in a minute. He had a two-minute investigation in the jail cell with a psychiatrist who ruled him incompetent, essentially, because he had long pauses. And again, Brandon Robb's a very intelligent man. He knows that you don't answer police or state officials unless you got a lawyer, and he didn't have a lawyer at that time in the cell with him. And he had a short hearing thereafter, and they brought in he actually had another investigative talk with a psychiatrist over the phone for 15 minutes. He was ruled incompetent and put in a mental institution. We filed a lawsuit, the Rutherford Institute, and we got him out. The judge that looked at the case ruled there was absolutely no evidence to hold the man. And there are 20,000, by the way, plus civil commitments like that that happen in Virginia alone each year, 1.5 million plus across the nation every year. So a lot of people are disappearing. They don't have the Rutherford Institute or their parents or whoever, friends. They may be loners. Nobody knows what's happened to them. But here's an interesting story. This is great. The Thursday before we got him out, he called me on the phone, and he said, John, I'm frightened. And this is a 6'5" Marine. And I said, what are you frightened of? He goes, there's a psychiatrist sitting here who says he's going to brainwash me and force medications on me. And the psychiatrist is listening on the phone. I said, well, let me tell the psychiatrist something. He's violating the law. In Virginia, you have to have a court order to force medications on anyone. And second, he's violating your constitutional rights. You're going to sue him. The next day we got him out. We now filed a federal lawsuit, which is now progressing in the courts, on the First Amendment right to free speech and the Fourth Amendment freedom to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. So, but the startling thing was is that we found out that in that case, a lot of the patients are in their food. They're actually given drugs, and thank God that that didn't happen to Brandon Robb. We got him out in a week, but we now learn from vets across the country. That's happened to veterans across the country. There's a program under the Department of Homeland Security called Operation Vigilant Eagle, which watches returning vets, watches their Facebook posts. This is the government doing spying on American citizens. And the National Security Agency, FBI, Department of Homeland Security collects information on them. So that case is going up through the courts right now. But, it was frightening. I learned a lot. I didn't know there were 1.5 million plus civil commitments in the United States alone each year. It's frightening.
Now, you tell this story in A Government of Wolves.
Yes.
Let me ask a couple of questions, just real quick. One, had he threatened anybody?
No, nobody specifically, no.
No vague, going to kill the president, or the president should die, nothing like that.
He's just very outspoken. In fact, a lot of vets that I know now are very outspoken about what's happening overseas and with their government. So there's a lot for the government to watch, let's put it that way.
Now, is your lawsuit going to challenge involuntary commitment? I mean, to me, involuntary commitment, I'm sure we're on a very similar page here, I would imagine. It's really unconstitutional. There's nothing in the Constitution that says you can bypass all the protections of the Bill of Rights by simply declaring that it's a civil rather than a criminal incarceration. Am I correct?
I agree. You know, and again, it takes knowledge that that's happened. What we're finding with a lot of people, they're snatched up, they get in the institutions, they're put on drugs, and they're there for quite a while. What happened to Brandon Robb was, and the good thing, his mom and stuff, they got on Facebook, they called us, we were alerted. Like I say, I was shocked. I didn't think that there were 1.5 million plus happening across the country. I had a reporter from L.A. County call me, and she was concerned. She said, John, there's 80,000 plus in just L.A. County alone civil commitments each year, involuntary commitments. She said, this is awful. What do we do? Well, you got to know who's in there, what their names are. You got to have somebody willing to challenge it. And but, you know, the thing about Brandon Robb is we got him out within a week. If we had been longer, I think it would have been much more difficult.
And he would have been injured by then.
He would have been injured, yes. We found out later, we actually had a couple of psychiatrists I worked with. He said it's just common practice to put drugs in the food. So they just kind of zone out and they're gone. They don't object. But, you know, Brandon was smart. He played along. He smiled a lot, he said. They put him in a room where he had to draw pictures, childish pictures. He said he thought they were insane. But, you know, I have a couple of good psychiatrist friends. When I talked to them, they were shocked. They said, you can't do an adequate psychological analysis of anybody over the phone or in 2 minutes in a jail cell. It just doesn't work that way.
Well, I don't know. I don't know your friends, John, but I think that they're being shocked is a bit deceptive. I don't know how you could be a psychiatrist and not know the abuses. And I am a psychiatrist, the abuses that take place on a routine basis. Now, are you challenging in your suit? Is it mostly just about this one former Marine? Or are you challenging the whole issue of the constitutionality of involuntary commitment?
Yeah, for this one, you know, you can only, you know, it's called standing. It's your client. I mean, but here's the key. If we do, you know, the case goes up and we do win it on the First and Fourth Amendment, it sends a clear message, and hopefully it will bring more people forward that we can help. So that's our goal.
Could you...
you know, I'll be honest with you. I've talked to people. Most people I've talked to have no idea this is occurring. It's like it may not be a secret, but a lot of people have no idea. When I say it, they'll go, you're kidding me. I'll go, no, go look it up. Go research it. They come back and say, you're right. This is freaky stuff.
Yeah, well, I think the general public is extremely ignorant, uninformed, and maybe not too interested in how widespread the psychiatric abuses are. They think that electroshock isn't done anymore, and I think hundreds of, we don't have figures, but probably hundreds of thousands of people are getting shocked. We even have some lobotomy going on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I read up on this stuff all the time. The electroshock stuff is amazing, yes.
I put up the first really good ECT resource center. You can go to ectresources.org, and there's enough there for any lawyer, any patient, any person to build a convincing case about how damaging shock treatment is.
I think one thing we really learned on this case is the government's watching people who,
yes.
If your Facebook posts, there's nothing secure anymore. I mean, I write on this all the time. If you go to our website at Rutherford.org, that's all we do is research it. There's nothing. If you do anything now digital, it's going in a file. The NSA has, the National Security Agency has an amazing computer system that downloads everything. So your bank records, everything you do.
Now, you mentioned something I'd never heard of before, that program under which he was surveilled. Could you give us that name again and tell us a little more if you know any more about it?
Yeah, it's called Operation Vigilant Eagle. Again, in this case, we're doing discovery, hoping to find out more about it. But the Wall Street Journal actually reported it several years ago. But under Janet Napolitano, under her reign under the Department of Homeland Security, there's just seems to be a kind of a wild paranoia about vets and American citizens generally, and they're watching every vet. In fact, I've had vets come to my office and say, tell me the same thing. They're freaked out about it, and, the Department of Homeland Security this time last year bought, and this is a shocking thing, bought over 1 billion hollow point bullets for their agents. So I don't, and again, I talk to experts in the field. The only reason you buy hollow point bullets, and if you know, I was a former Army officer. We weren't allowed to use them, but they explode on contact. So the Department of Fisheries, the Social Security Administration all have hollow point rounds for their SWAT team men. There is a concern about vets, because there are a lot of vets that are coming back, and again, I talk to them. They're very disgruntled. They've seen things overseas they don't like. They think, things that Americans are not being told, and it bothers them. These are good people, by the way. They're not crazy.
What sorts of things, John?
I'll just tell you one thing that I was told this summer by a former Air Force officer, by the way. He said that he went over gung-ho. He was Air Force Academy, flying jets. He said he routinely drove by opium fields. He said that where American troops are actually working in them and guarding them.
Oh, Lord.
It blew his mind, yeah. He said after that he couldn't. And then the transfer of money, he saw some transfer of money. He said just cash, American cash, in the hands of Afghanis. He didn't say they were Taliban or anything like that, but he said that. He said there's just, he said the corruption's so bad over there that, he said totally disillusioned them. He just got out of the Army, Air Force. He came home.
But, John, I want to unleash you in a couple of minutes on these issues of the emerging American police state, which is the subtitle of his book, a very important book, A Government of Wolves. This case that you're involved, can you give us some of the First and Fourth Amendment arguments that you're making? I think some of our listeners will be very interested in that, the arguments that you're making against this man's involuntary commitment or involuntary commitment in general?
Yeah, there's been a good sign in the case, by the way. Several weeks ago, the federal government, the Justice Department, under Eric Holder, moved to dismiss the case, and the judge ruled that it could be dismissed, that there were valid First and Fourth Amendment arguments. Well, that's a good sign. So the judge is seeing something bad happen to this particular Marine. But the First Amendment argument is just your right to freedom of speech. Freedom to print, freedom to do whatever you want, as long as it's not. The law says that, to grab you for an involuntary commitment, you have to exhibit a true threat. That would be something like, I'm traveling to Washington tomorrow or next week to shoot President Obama. That could be considered a true threat. And, maybe a valid reason for someone to be investigated. Brandon Robb did none of that. It was just general anti-government things he said. He didn't threaten to kill anybody. And the other thing is the Fourth Amendment says that we have a right to be secure, and that's the word, secure, that person's papers, house, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures unless you have probable cause, the police or the government. And the probable cause means there must be some kind of evidence that you're up to something illegal before they can actually do surveillance or touch you or arrest you. And they had none of that here. In fact, they did not have enough evidence to get a search warrant for Brandon Robb's house because he hadn't done anything illegal. If they would have, they would have found he owns no weapons. He has no weapons whatsoever. The most dangerous thing, he said, probably in his house is a Perry knife and an old ceremonial sword he brought back from Afghanistan.
I think what you're doing is very, very important. One of the great lacks in the civil libertarian movement, like the ACLU over the years, has been a lack of concern about involuntary treatment. They view it as a, or have at least in the past when I knew them weller, better, they viewed civil libertarian, they viewed commitment as a good deed. You know,
in fact, the ACLU was actually contacted first on this case. They passed a number of lawyers that I talked to. I tried to get them involved, and what they said was, oh, civil commitment, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. And I said, but not in the cases that I see. And I will argue with these guys, so I just finally gave up and said, and I found a few lawyers that would work. When we take a case, we don't charge. So I have to find lawyers that will do it pro bono, it's called, and we pay the legal expenses. So, because the people we defend could never get in court. They couldn't afford the lawyers. They're too darn expensive. But most of the lawyers I talked to, I mean, good criminal lawyers, they ducked. They didn't want to touch it, which shocked me, by the way.
Well, you're in my world now, and this is what's been going on for decades.
I'm
really sad to hear that the ACLU is still passing on these kinds of cases. Disgraceful.
Yeah, the thing is, people don't understand the issues. When I look at an issue, I look at how it impacts the individual before me. And, I had dinner the other night with Brandon Robb. He came to town. He's just as normal as anybody else, any 27-year-old out there today. Has his own home business, avid athletic guy and all those kind of things. He just got caught in a weird surveillance trap. The government was actually reading his Facebook posts, his private grouping posts, and watching him. So
wow.
That's dangerous stuff. But we now know the National Security Agency is watching everything anyway. So
yeah,
anything you
yeah.
say controversial today, I warn my friends, by the way, watch out on your text messages, whatever. Don't make silly jokes about guns or bombs or anything like that because people are getting arrested for that. We have vets who have made jokes. They say the next day they get on the Facebook, they get the next day the FBI is at the doorstep. I had one agent who, one guy who texted me, by the way, and said that he was concerned about some of the things that were going on. He's a former Secret Service. He worked in the Secret Service with the Army. The next day, two national security agents came to his door and said they were going to deport him. He came in my office weeping.
Oh, my.
He was sitting in front of me crying. This guy's 6'8". But now, you know, it's emboldened. Some of the vets have become emboldened by this. They don't like it. They don't think it's fair, and I don't think it's fair either. No. If you're going to send somebody over to war to serve their country and treat them like this, I mean, they have trouble getting veterans benefits anyway. I mean, they have a backlog of like 20,000 claims, something like that. So none of it's working well. We don't treat the guys that go over there well anyway.
One last question on the general issue, and then I want you to just dive into to the rest of your work, which is huge. Are you planning to make any challenges? Have you gotten an interest in making any challenges to civil commitment in principle? I sure hope somebody with your kind of ability would do that.
Yeah, I hope to do it. It's just programs like yours are good, getting the issue out there, getting clients, getting people who want to do it, but and I think eventually we might do that. I mean, I have more people contacting me that are concerned about it. The thing is that a lot of people are nervous if a board of social workers, and this is what happened with Brandon Robb, and a few psychologists met, read his Facebook post, and said he was mentally unstable. This is about interviewing him first. A lot of people go along with that and say, yeah, we got to watch these guys. But like I say, the Constitution says otherwise. You have to have evidence. And again, if they had the evidence here, it would have been a different thing, but they had no evidence. They just snatched this guy away and stuck him in a mental hospital.
What was this board you talked about?
They have a consulting board here in Virginia that basically meets, looks at allegations that are handed to them, and they decide whether or not someone should be approached for involuntary commitment.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know about this stuff, and I thought I knew most of the horror that's going on.
But, you know, one, like I said, 1.5 million of these, and people disappear. The other thing I found out with research is that a lot of the doctors working with these involuntary commitments in psychiatric wards are connected to the pharmaceutical industry. So there's a lot of money to be made. So I would venture to say that money has a lot to do with this. As you know, there's a lot of money made off of giving people drugs, forcing drugs on people. I mean, you have, what, one in eight kids now on Ritalin in America? There's a reason for that.
Yeah, it's a huge issue. You know, you may not know, I testified before Congress in 2010 on the drugging of our troops, which is mammoth right now. They held a hearing based on my book, Medication Madness. I was the lead expert. The first time, instead of my having to be, you know, number 10, I was number one for half an hour. Then the VA got 3 minutes, and the Psychiatric Association got 3 minutes. But, you know, very little came of it. So shockingly little came, even of having a hearing like that. Very little coverage, very little movement afterward from it.
I've been fighting the government on these issues for over 30 years. When I find out you have to keep dogging them, you have to keep at them, you have to keep filing the lawsuits. And then when they make a mistake, like with the Brandon Robb case, you have to pursue that. But it's not easy. I mean, like in our case now, I have three lawyers working with me on the case, and the Justice Department has 20-some lawyers on the other side, all paid with taxpayer money. So your enemy, if you want to cast them like that, and they are your enemy. I mean, they want to put this guy away. They have all the money, the lawyers, stuff like that. So it's a David Goliath situation.
Do you think this particular situation of the use of the surveillance and the involuntary treatment, is this getting worse under the Obama administration, or is this just a continuation?
I opposed George Bush's policies vehemently early on, in fact, in the early 2000s. The thing that's surprising about President Obama, it's just zoomed under him for whatever reason. Surveillance is massive. I mean, again, if you go to our website, Rutherford.org, I write on these issues all the time. It's scary. Our research, and I have people that research it all the time, it's there's nothing. In fact, I had an NSA agent tell me, who worked in the NSA over 20 years. He likes my new book, by the way. He's been passing it out. He says, finally someone's saying it. But he said that the NSA is downloading at least a trillion bits of information from the Internet and your bank accounts, et cetera, text messages, a trillion a month. And that doesn't count what the FBI database, the Department of Homeland Security database, all those things that are almost all these things are happening simultaneously. And then we can talk about next year all the drones coming now with all their devices in 2015. We're moving into a very ominous, I would say, paradigm. It doesn't look good.
Let's go to break. We're talking to the author of Government of Wolves, John W. Whitehead, performing huge societal service. Glad to have you on the show. Proud to have you on the show. We come back, I'll stop insisting you talk about psychiatry and unleash you to talk about all the broad issues that you cover in your book, A Government of Wolves. We'll be back in a few minutes. And this is Dr. Peter Breggin. John, are you still there? I heard noises that sounded like a phone hanging up.
No, I'm here.
good.
You never know what those noises are today.
This is Peter Breggin again. Of course, it's me. And my guest, John W. Whitehead, author of A Government of Wolves, The Emerging American Police State. Before I unleash John to talk, I want to remind you that I'm coming to New York City for the first time in a long time. I'm really pleased about that, and I'll be there October 25th and 6th. I'll be talking on October 26th for over an hour. And to get to this, plug in the R.D. Lang. That's R.D. Lang, L-A-I-N-G, in the 21st century. Google R.D. Lang in the 21st century. It's going to be on Staten Island at Wayne College. John, you've been mentioning things that have, you know, I have bits and pieces of awareness of the government buying untold numbers of bullets, all kinds of different agencies buying bullets, drones. Tell us what's going on.
Well, that's a lot. That's a big question. What's going on? Basically, the things I track in my new book, A Government of Wolves, which I've been, again, writing on for years, is the militarization of the police is advancing rapidly, as we saw with the Brandon Robb case. And starting in the early 1980s under the Reagan administration, the Pentagon started handing out military equipment to police agencies across the country, from armored outfits, helmets, assault rifles, assault vehicles, even things like a thing called the Peacemaker. They have them over in Afghanistan. They actually have turrets on top and guns. Some smaller police departments actually have those. They're like similar to tanks. The virtually every police agency has that now. So, and in fact, some of it slowed down a bit under Bush, but it's actually picked up under Obama even more, billions of dollars of equipment going to police. All the police now, the FBI, Department of Homeland Security, Social Security Administration, IRS, everybody has SWAT teams now, and they all look very similar in their black outfits. There are 80,000 SWAT team raids that occur across America now, annually. About 3,000 in 1980, so it's increased about 3,000% in a little over 20 years. So that's building. Basically, a lot of the raids are done under the so-called war of drugs mantra, mainly for marijuana, and they're going through people's door, no-knock raids where the people are getting shot. In fact, I detailed some of the cases in my book, one which was striking case. 2 years ago, Ianna Jones, 7-year-old girl, African-American, was asleep in her apartment, wrapped in her prince's blanket, on her couch in her living room. The police did a no-knock raid. She was shot while she was asleep, killed. The blood splashed on the floor. Her father came out screaming and crying when he saw his daughter. They took the father and shoved him face down in her blood. Actually, the person they were looking for was two floors up. They were at the wrong place. So there's a lot of these wrong place raids, which I detail in my book. They shoot the dogs first. You can actually go on YouTube and watch some of these raids, and if that doesn't scare you, then nothing will scare you. But there's a lot of instances of people getting killed. Another case that I detail, Jose Guerrera, about a year and a half ago, was at home asleep with his family in Arizona. The police did a no-knock raid on his home looking for marijuana. They were doing this throughout the area, and I think it was Phoenix or Tucson, I forget. These occur in the middle of the night, about 3 a.m. He pushed his wife and his child in a closet. He stood at the end of the hallway with his hunting rifle. The police saw him. They discharged, I believe, over 90 bullets. They shot him at least 50 times. They would not let the medics take care of him. He bled to death in his hallway. They claimed he had fired at them. When an investigation was done, they found he had never even fired the weapon one time. The safety had never come off his rifle. So we're seeing some of that kind of crazy stuff. And no marijuana was found, by the way, in his home. It was another mistaken raid. We're seeing a lot of those things. That's a scary thing in and of itself. That's going to increase, by the way, because actually, there's federal grants to SWAT teams for doing marijuana raids. And they do them in the middle of the night where you're disoriented. People have actually reached for glasses, for example, or something in the middle of the night. The police think it's a gun. They shoot them. And the scary thing here is the mainstream media does not report much of this. So most Americans, again, are clueless like they are on the involuntary commitments. So that's one big feature. If you got any questions on that, besides all the stuff that the NSA is doing now, and then we have drones coming. President Obama signed legislation allowing drones to fly over America by 2015 without any civil liberties protections whatsoever. Drones will be equipped with scanning devices, all kinds of weapons from rubber bullets. They'll have sound cannons. They'll be able to hover over your home and see what you're doing in your home like a TSA scanning device. There are miniature drones now. They have seagull drones. They have hummingbird drones. There's now a prototype mosquito drone, which can land on your somewhere on your body and inject something in you. They have a new drone they're developing, and this thing's really scary. You can go on YouTube and watch it. It's called the Atlas. It's an actual six-foot man. And in the future, that will be a coming to your door. And it'll be controlled at a distance by the police, but I'm not sure how friendly that will be, but I would suppose that with the way we're seeing the SWAT team raids, it won't be very, very, very friendly. And, you know, again, there's not a lot you can do to fight these things because they're very advanced machines.
What's the response of the left, the middle, and the right to all of this?
When they find out, again, people have read my book. I had a lawyer who read my book, and he bought $2,000 worth of the book. He said, "I'm so freaked out. I'm getting educated." When people learn about it, they get concerned. But you know, the average American watches 154 hours of television a month. So most Americans are watching something, reality shows or whatever they're watching. And again, the mainstream media. Getting the mainstream media to cover these issues is very, very difficult. My book now has actually gotten out there, and I've done some mainstream media interviews and talked about this stuff. And when people find out, they gasp. But our schools don't talk about it. And, again, the things happening in our schools are really freaking me out. Kids are getting arrested for food fights. Six-year-old kids are being taken to the police station. I mean, we've been handling cases like that since the 1990s. We had a case up in New Jersey not too long ago where four boys were on the playground playing cops and robbers with their fingers going bang, bang. They're kindergartners. They were pulled into the principal's office, taken out of school. The police were brought in. The charge, they had weapons in violation of the zero tolerance policy, their fingers. So we're seeing that crazy kind of stuff. And as I argue in my book, our schools are becoming instruments of compliance. I mean, how do you live in a police state? If you step out of line just a little bit, you get cracked over the head, you get taken out of school. And there's a bad effect of that, by the way. It's called the school-to-prison pipeline. A lot of minorities end up in prison once they're suspended from school. They go out on the streets. They're not in school where they should be. They get in trouble. So it's just the total conglomeration of what we're seeing, as I look at it. I mean, and I've told people this, I'd say the last year I've become what I would call totally creeped out by the future. What's going to happen? It doesn't look good. No, I'm not a pessimist, by the way, but I am a realist, and I believe that you can change things. My hero was Martin Luther King, and he proved you can change things. But we have to have knowledge, and we have to get organized.
What's the best media coverage you've gotten? Just to sort of get an understanding of who's responding to you. Best in the terms of conventional terms.
Radio, mainly. Radio people out there who deal with high information. A lot of television is low information. Some conservatives, some on the left. It depends on the person. Once people get knowledgeable and they look at the facts. I mean, I had a radio guy who interviewed me. He said, "I want to call you a conspiratorialist, but you have 30 pages of footnotes. So everything I say is footnoted to the nth degree." And that's all we do is study this stuff. But once, and like I say, when you study it, I mean, you see a large open wound, and it's hitting our constitutional rights, and we tend to be oblivious. But in my movie, you know, by the way, I basically couch everything around science fiction movies, like Minority Report, and I advise people, go see some of these movies. The movie Minority Report is set in the year 2054. Every bit of technology in that movie is now available to the government. We're 40 years ahead of the curve. So technology is moving so rapidly. I mean, I was told by, again, another NSA agent that the computer they have in Utah now, the NSA, is so powerful, it actually parses the information, gives it to the agent, and the agent acts on it. In other words, we're not telling the machine what to do. The machine's speaking to us now and saying, here is a troublemaker or whatever. And the older policemen I talk to are really concerned. They don't like the way this is going. They tell me it's awful. And they say old-fashioned police work has disappeared. In fact, I had one veteran police chief tell me that the reason the two Boston Marathon guys, they had on camera. They had them on the FBI watch list. The FBI had actually visited them. He said, well, you don't catch those kind of people because you know why? They're watching me and you, John. Everybody's being watched now. So who do you, if everybody is a suspect, who do you really crack down on? So the terrorists, I've been told, they're going to get through. There are not a lot of terrorists, I don't think, but they're going to get through because they're busy watching people like us who commit no crimes. Or Brandon
wow.
Robb. Or Brandon Robb, who says he doesn't like what the government's doing. Yeah. They watch him and put him in a mental hospital.
What do you make out of the government with the bullets? Is it trying to just corner the market and keep them out of other people's hands? I mean, they must be feeding the arms industry, which certainly
they're definitely doing that. Well, let me tell you the truth, they have. Actually, I was alerted by somebody. We researched it. They have bought up a lot of regular rounds because bullets have disappeared, ammo. The thing about the hollow point bullets they bought this time last year, $1 billion, they actually contracted for those. A group called ATK, I think. It's in my book. They actually ordered those made for them. And again, I was in the Army. We could not use them because when they hit, they enter the body, create a small hole. When they exit, they create a huge hole. So you're dead. That's President Kennedy was shot with a hollow point bullet. That's why the back of his head flew off.
Yeah.
So there is a paranoia. A lot of it's about vets. There are a lot of disgruntled folks in America. I mean, you're seeing bankruptcy, but Detroit has gone into bankruptcy. I've been told Illinois may go into bankruptcy. A lot of governments, there's a fear of unrest. And you know, I really feel for a lot of minorities, the people I deal with, minorities especially, I mean, they're the ones that are targeted in the SWAT team raids. It's mainly brown-skinned people. You realize, too, and I talk about this in my book, almost 50% of the people in prisons in America, we have the largest prison population per capita of any, this is amazing, of any country in the world.
Yeah.
But 50% of those people almost are either Hispanics or black people.
Yeah.
So there's a subtle racism here. And kids in inner city schools, I mean, there are good books on this, by the way, and I cite them in my book. Kids in the inner city schools, a lot of them in the big cities, I mean, they have policemen stalking the hallways. Recently in Chicago, they took some African-American boys. They argued in the hallway. They took them downstairs. The police did genital searches. There's rectum searches going on across America. In Milwaukee, some police officers have been sued for causing bleeding of rectums on the street. Finding no marijuana, by the way, or whatever they're looking for in somebody's anus. So that's a new thing. There's a case I detail in the book with the Ashley Dobbs case. This happened this time last year in July. Her and her niece were driving through Texas. A policeman said he saw a cigarette fly out of the car. He pulled them over and asked if they had marijuana. They said no. He pulled them out of the car. He brought another officer, and they did vaginal and rectum searches on the side of the road.
Really?
Without changing the gloves. Those women have sued, I think, for $1.5 million. They're going to get it, too, by the way. They're going to get
my
their
Lord.
Salary.
Where was this, John?
It was in Texas. I don't know the exact city, but it's all detailed in my book. But that's a new thing, and now the Supreme Court's actually upheld forced extraction of DNA from your body. I mean, we're seeing sort of a invasion of the body trend in the government now. And all this is not paranoia. It's all footnoted. These are Supreme Court cases. I mean, I wish I could make it up because it would be a great movie, and I could become a famous director, I hope. But what we're seeing, and I show it in the book, is that science fiction is becoming fact. I mean, everything that we've – again, Marshall McLuhan, I'm sure you remember Marshall McLuhan, the great media writer. He
sure.
said basically that artists were the antennae. They picked up things early. So a lot of our science fiction movies – when I was in New York recently, I went through the New York Times, New York's Times Square – I was looking around, and all the movies were disaster movies. Every one of them, Elysium, the Z movie about zombies destroying the world. I said, oh, my God, what are we being told? What's coming? So, I mean, all this sounds kind of crazy, but a lot of the sci-fi movies actually predicted this just a few short years ago. I mean, Minority Report came out in the year 2000, I think. But all the technology is 40 years ahead of its time. With drones coming in 2015, they're going to be everywhere. It's a $30 billion a year industry. I mean, the aerospace industry is going to make tons off of these things. But Again, you won't even know they have a Beetle drone which can come in your home and record and watch you. I mean, the FBI now admits they can turn on your cell phone from a distance and turn it into a microphone. They admit it. And the FBI admitted 2 months ago, an agent on CNN, that actually they're downloading our phone calls. So there is a weird paranoia. But I think, again, you can't blame all the human beings. I think the technology is driving the show at this point. It's so powerful. I mean, how do you deal with a computer that tells you that there's a guy in Utah that said something anti-government? You got to go get him. Do you say no to the computer?
It's quite amazing. Is your book getting reviewed anywhere like the New York Times?
No, I hadn't hit the New York Times, but it's got a lot of good reviews. If you go to Amazon.com where it's for sale, there's a lot of reviews on it, and they're all good.
But, no, what I'm wondering about is to what extent is any of the old media paying attention to
it's very
to what
difficult
saying.
To get them to look at these issues.
Yeah. See, that's been my
I would say this, I argue in my book, they're part of the problem. The point of the media and Thomas Jefferson, all of them, they thought guarding the press was so important because they said it gives knowledge to the people. If you're not reading about it in the newspaper or hearing it on the news, you don't know what's happening. I mean, there's a lot of good information on the Internet, yeah. But people have, you have to go to the Internet, in my opinion, to get the news or listen to good talk radio shows, some television. But you have to be alert. You have to stop. I tell people education precedes action, but the only way you're going to get educated is go to the Internet, study, read the books, get knowledgeable. You can make a big impact, as Martin Luther King did. There's a great article that he had written that came out right after he was shot where he was calling for militant, nonviolent resistance. He said the government no longer listens to us, and we need to go to Washington and basically shut it down. And he was planning on doing that. He never got to do it, but he was killed first. But, I urge people to get together. And nonviolence is the issue. Don't get violent. It doesn't work. And we don't want to go on that route. Because a lot of people are talking about getting guns now. And I had a former Army veteran tell me recently, a young guy, he says, I got my gun. I'm ready for him. And I said to him, well, when they arrive, they're going to have 20 guys on the SWAT team. They're going to have armored vehicles, armored suits, helmets, and assault rifles. Put your gun down and search your rights, and then call us if you get, maybe we can fight it in the courtroom.
Yeah, I think that's very, very, very good advice. If you, if your Marine hadn't, been as judicious as he could be in the mental hospital, I don't care how big he is, they just would have thrown him to the ground, and one injection of a so-called antipsychotic drug would immobilize him and then lobotomize him.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and that's the stories we've heard, and I've got even radio talk show hosts that we've defended who say strong things in the radio, like, against the government, the drones are going to be killers, the government's going wacky, the government's paranoid. The next day, they go home, and we just helped one, a radio talk show host. He went home, and there was a little thing on his doorknob, and it said FBI interview, and he just refused to do it. He sent us he emailed us what the questions were, and the questions were inane stuff like, have you ever smoked marijuana? Have you ever done anything illegal? Of course he hadn't, but the Fifth Amendment to our Constitution says you have a right not to incriminate yourself. Don't answer those kind of stupid questions. Get a lawyer. So we answered them and backed them off. We just told the FBI to stick it. Because they shouldn't be doing that. I mean, these are free speech issues. I mean, if someone does a true threat, and I think you're right, they said, I want to go kill the mayor, or I want to go kill the president, or whatever, the government should investigate those things, sure. But just saying, I don't like the way the government's going, or it's awful, or it's evil, people have a right to say that. We forget the country was founded by people who said those kind of things and meant it, like Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, James Madison, the people who put our Constitution together.
Yeah, well, they organized an armed rebellion in the name of liberty.
Yep. And, they gave us a lot of neat things, but the thing that blows my mind is civics is no longer taught well in our schools. I talk to the law students who study with me every summer, and we've had a 29-year program. I asked each one of them to give me the five freedoms in the First Amendment. I've not found one law student who can. Last year, I spoke to 150 of the best lawyers in the country, Harvard, Berkeley, those kind of schools. They wanted to know about my cases, and the speech was going well. But I stopped in the middle. I just wanted to see what the knowledge level was in the room. I said, can any lawyer in this room give me the five freedoms of the First Amendment? Not one could. So there's a lack of, if you don't know what's in the First Amendment, they really don't know what's in the Fourth Amendment, which is the key, the bedrock of the Bill of Rights, which says the government can't touch us or do surveillance unless they have some evidence that we're doing something illegal. And they're not, you know, people don't know that. I mean, New York just got sued and lost the case where they've been doing all these stop and frisk, millions of them on people, 90%, by the way, of Hispanics and blacks, are the people they stop and frisk on the streets. So these things are happening. The lawsuits can be filed, but it's, you know, the government in America was built on a bottom-up theory, which is the American citizens. Remember, the Constitution starts, we the people. We're the government. We forgot that. What we do is we think that somebody else is the government. No, no, no. It's up to us to change things. I mean, people complain about Edward Snowden to me. And I say, well, what Edward Snowden did is he stuck a mirror in our face and said, you're the problem. You should have known that the NSA. I started writing on the NSA back in the 1980s when it was discovered they were snooping on Americans and they shouldn't have been doing it. That information has been around for years. So finally someone blows the lid off and it's time to wake up. We've been asleep.
He really has performed a huge public service, just huge. He just stirred
yeah,
up.
Yeah, yeah, he's told us that everything that you're doing is being watched. And people say, well, I can get off the grid. Not really these days. It's not quite that easy. You can't buy, sell, move. With drones coming, they're going to be everywhere. They're saying 30,000 over America by 2030. That's in FAA airspace. That doesn't count the miniature drones that you're developing now, which can, a humming, you can go on YouTube and watch the hummingbird drone. It looks like a hummingbird. You can't tell the difference. It can follow you, record you, watch what you're doing, come to your window. You have no idea what what's happening. But this is the government doing surveillance without a search warrant, without any cause that you're doing anything wrong.
We've got a few minutes left. I'm very, very glad to have you on the show, John. John W. Whitehead, author of A Government of Wolves, the Emerging American Police State. Just a few minutes left. I'd like to talk about where you're going, where you see the country going, or where you're going, the future of your work.
Well, while I was researching this book, I looked at former regimes to see, you know, are we repeating history? Obviously, we are. I mean, Nazi Germany, there's a lot of good books. You have to go search for them. But, you know, Adolf Hitler came in with slogans of hope and change. By 1933, he was so popular that the Nazis were thinking of getting rid of the Gestapo. In 1936, the world celebrated Hitler. They had the Olympic Games there. Remember Jesse Owens, that situation?
Sure.
As early as 1933, newspapers were running stories in Germany about the concentration camps. They were already operating. And what did people say? Ah, we'll never end up there. You know, that's just for the bad people, the Jews, the gays, or whoever, the gypsies, whoever Hitler was targeting at the time. 1937, 38, a lot of those people were sitting in concentration camps. They didn't get the message. When the government does those kind of things, you have to object at that point in time. You have to resist it. And that's what Martin Luther King taught. Resist it when it happens. Don't wait. Most Americans today are waiting. If we continue to wait, I'm afraid we're going to wake up, and we're going to be in a situation we don't want to be in, and it's going to be too late. So, I mean, some people I argue with, in fact, and there are a lot of good people in government, good Secret Service agents who contact me, and they say, John, it's worse than you think. It's much worse than you think. And they tell me they don't like it, but I asked a young NSA agent not too long ago, if you don't like the way things are going, why don't you out the government like Snowden did? You know what he said to me? Two words, Bradley Manning. I don't want to wind up like Bradley Manning, who sat in solitary confinement for a year and got 35 years in the pen for reporting things that were not that were being done, that were not like killing innocent citizens and stuff like that. So 35 years, and he weeps in front of the judge. So Bradley Manning has sent a strong message to a lot of people in government: keep your mouth shut.
Wow.
So it doesn't look good. I mean, I wish I could give you a rosy, and I could raise money and go live on the coast of Florida somewhere, but I can't do that.
Yeah.
So I've been at this job for about 40 years. I would say, like I said, this last year or so has really creeped me out.
Yeah.
Our research, again, I have policy analysts that work for me, and that's all we do, research these issues. My book has 30 pages of footnotes.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see what happens with psychiatry, too, because one
I'll give you, you'll like this. I mean, you might not like it. I had an NSA agent tell me, he said, John, we're following the Soviet model in America now. And I said, what do you mean by it? He said, the psychiatry, we're going to start putting away dissidents like they did in the old Soviet Union. You know about that. Sakharov and people
I've
like that.
I've written a lot about that, yeah.
Yeah. That's what an actual government agent told me. He said, the word Homeland Security, and I have not had a chance to research it. He just told me a few weeks ago. He said the word Homeland Security, all that Homeland stuff, he says those are all phrases used by the Soviets.
Wow. Well, if I can help you in any way with any of that, as psychiatry gets ramped up, you know, it's certainly huge, huge concern of mine. You may be aware, you know, you're talking about Nazi Germany, that the Holocaust actually begins with the murder of mental patients. That the murder of mental patients set up the entire Holocaust. They have written about this. I've lectured in Germany about this, that the ovens were invented by psychiatry, the wooden soap, and showers and gas chambers were all developed in the psychiatric so-called euthanasia program, which is just a vast murder program, which actually then morphed.
And one other thing I talk about in my book is the rise of private prisons. Private corporations are taking over prisons. They demand that they'll pay for the prisons as long as the states keep the jails 90% full. While I was researching Nazi Germany, I was shocked to find that Auschwitz was essentially a private prison where they made rubber products for Europe.
Well, we're going to closure now. John W. Whitehead, his book, A Government of Wolves, The Emerging American Police State. I'm glad you're doing what you're doing, and thank you very much for being on the show, John Whitehead.
Thank you. Amazon.com, you can buy the book on, by the way. Thank you.
Thank you.